When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Ultra Hope Girls of Danganronpa podcast. Today, we are going to be talking about episode 7 of the Future and the Despair arcs of the DR3 anime, featuring our favorite girls back again for the first part, at least. So we're excited about that. Just a heads up, this episode will spoil.
Episode 7, Danganronpa 3 anime.
All right. And that's it, laddies. Let's get into it.
I'm Maddie.
I'm Marin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're the Ultra Hope Girls.
1, 2.
Welcome to the Danganronpa podcast.
You're on the threshold of an amazing episode. Showtime.
The first thing I want to say is, I'm watching the sub version, so the Japanese version, and I just wanted to give major kudos to Monica's voice actress. She's really good.
I'm watching the dub version, sadly.
<Me too>. What?
I know. No, I'm just teasing. It's fun, actually, to see a bunch of new... It's fun! It's fun to see a bunch of new voice actors, because a lot of the ones from this anime are very different than the ones from the game.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, it's interesting to see different people's takes on the characters. Like, specifically, Toko in this one is a different voice actress.
So, and the interpretation of the character is very, very different. Like, it's a really good example of two actors with basically the same source material taking total liberties. Like, that's why acting is so fun, because you never know, you know, like, what, like, how someone is going to interpret something. And that's why, for all of the people who want to be actors out there, that's why, you know, when you're auditioning for stuff, you shouldn't really compare yourself to others, because they're just looking for you, really. I mean, that's just the God's honest truth. So, and this is a good example of it. It's two different Tokos, two different directors cast these two different actresses. And so there you go, lads.
Amen. Snaps to that.
Speaking of voices, Monica, when she's giving her big speech at the beginning, she says some of her quotes in very different voices that sound a lot like Masaru and Nagisa, and it reminded me a lot of Junko's different voices that she used, like in chapter 5 and 6, you know, when she's like, you know, teacher Junko and like intense Junko and like all this stuff. It's just kind of cool that, you know, we see Monica transforming into this role of being Junko's predecessor. Is that a word?
Does predecessor come first? I don't remember
heir.
If predecessor comes
heir
first.
Heir.
We're going
heir to Junko's throne.
She's taking over as like the next Junko, right? And we see her even do that through her mannerisms and through, you know, this speech to the Monokumas. Yeah, it's just kind of interesting.
It's true. I had a note. Oh, I had like an actual thought. Oh, it's I'm smart. I have thoughts. My thought was also that so right now Monica is like trying to copy what Junko is already doing. Like, she's just like following in her footsteps and not really adding anything new. It kind of reminds me, like, mild My Hero Academia spoilers, but it kind of reminds me of like how Midoriya like idolizes All Might so much that he almost can't think outside the box of like what it's supposed to look like what despair is supposed to look like for Monica. And so, you know, I'm kind of wondering if like that's why she's so quick to fall, is because she can't like think outside of this mold that Junko has like given to her, not like on purpose, but like she's idolized her for so long that it's hard for her to think outside. That's why she's like, yeet guys, I'm going to space, and that's it.
Here, I said, Monica's like, despair is out of style now that Junko's gone. Guess I gotta destroy the world or leave it. And she's like, and the choice is easy. And then she just leaves. And it was so, like, anticlimactic and just... And it reminded me a little bit of a quote that I heard, and I have no idea who it's from, but it was that the only thing worse than hatred is apathy. It's worse to feel apathy from someone than hatred, because at least they're acknowledging you. Actually, Caroline, it might have been you in the first chapter of this podcast
when we talked about Jotaro.
Yeah,
and how it's like, oftentimes, like, especially when like younger children are mean or they're annoying, it's not because they really maybe want to be hated, but it's because the having the attention is better than having absolutely everyone ignore you,
right?
Because we crave social interaction, like, we're social animals, you know, as much as I hate to admit that. I'm just kidding, sorry, that's horrible. I'm an introvert, that's the joke. That's the joke. I love people, but we need
that. But it's kind of interesting because, like, I think in a way she does take Junko's despair and makes it her own through apathy, which is a lot less intimidating of a villain, but in a different lens is just as effective in terms of emotional manipulation. You know, like Toko and Kamaru, they don't get answers out of her. They don't really get anything. And it's just kind of like, oh.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
The despair of an anticlimactic ending with the villain. I had a note about that as well, and I was like curious as to what you guys thought about like Monica just giving up, whether that was like, ooh, quirky villain, blah blah blah, or whether that was just like a totally useless like plot point. Because I was like, at first I was like, yeah, this is so anticlimactic, and like, what's the point of this at all? But then I was like, you know, it's so teenager of her that I honestly can't be upset with it. Like, it's just, you know, which I will say, I don't know how much time has passed since the end of Ultra Despair Girls, but it's definitely at least a couple of years, right? Because the kids seem older. So
it's been at least enough time for Toko and Byakuya to have 19 kids. At least
right. That's
Oh, God. On the topic of Toko, my next note is that Toko has still not changed her clothes.
Right. She is not an intern anymore, but she's chosen to wear her stinky, smelly clothes.
Literally
instead.
From the first Killing Game. That is what she wore in Trigger Happy Havoc. And it's been like probably like 5 years and she has not changed her clothes.
You know, with football teams and hockey teams and stuff, how people will wear the same socks like throughout the season.
Really?
Oh, that's they won't wash them.
Ew.
Oh,
it's so gross.
Your socks, then it's bad luck. And that to me is Toko's outfit. She's like, the only way we can get through this Killing Game is if Toko continues to wear that outfit.
That's the sock thing. That's so gross, though. Ew.
It's a little gnarly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's real.
Also talking about Toko and Genocide Jack. Genocide Jack, when she comes on the screen, is labeled as the high school level murderer, which is quite a title in this game series. To be the ultimate murderer,
right?
I think we should consider that.
Well, every other murderer was caught so far.
Oh,
and she hasn't been. Also, I have a note that says, the kids survived!
Yes!
I was so happy.
Beans.
They deserve the world.
And Jotaro's not wearing his mask!
Yeah!
Aww, it's post-COVID over there. I'm going back for a sec. I had a note to add to Maddie's point about like Monica being a teenager, and then we kind of went on a tangent there, but I got to go back for a sec because I had never thought of it that way. And that kind of shows the contrast between the themes of childhood and Ultra Despair Girls and like where it's what's become of it and maybe what would have become of the children's paradise that she created if they had gone through with it, because children grow up and Monica, like a teenager, sorry, that's a stereotype, but it's kind of true. I mean, I did it. Like, it's like, Mom, leave me alone, and like locks herself in a room. Like, it's so, thank you for, that. But yeah, just, it's the contrast of the two things that I think is why that moment happens, in my opinion.
And I also noticed another funny little detail that I kind of interpreted as like the directors of the story telling us that like that phase of childhood was gone for those kids. And this is just one funny detail, but at the very beginning of the episode, some of the Monokumas that are hanging out with Monica are like at like a bar. Like, it looks like they're like drinking alcohol. And I'm like, Huh.
I feel like the Monokumas in this episode were really just champs, you know? They were chilling. They were buddies. There was no killing from the Monokumas. Like, they were just hanging out this time. Yeah, it was kind of nice.
It's all just we could ask for.
Just bros being bros, you know?
Right.
Just bros being bros.
Yeah. Talking about Monica and growing up, she, when she's talking to Toko and Kamaru, brings up a quote where she says, "There was this person who kind of turned me into an adult way too soon." And it flips to a picture of Nagito. And I want to talk about that, because what did we think that meant? How did Nagito affect Monica so much that she became who she is today?
Well, I mean, throughout Ultra Despair Girls, he is, you know, he's Despair Nagito, so he's like kind of for despair, but he's also for hope still in like this weird twisted way. And so Nagito in general, even throughout the second game too, represents this gray area that is so present in adulthood. It's like when we're children, the black and the white feels so easy to commit to, but as we grow up, we realize there's nuances to things. And I think that Nagito's personality, it shows all of the nuances of adulthood, because he is so gray all the time. He is never black and white.
50 Shades of Gray.
That's good.
Thank you. But you're right. No, I actually really agree with you. I think that's true. And I think the way that I heard it the first time, I went back and I played the minute over again, because I was like, what does that mean? Like, what did he do? But I don't think it's meant to be taken in that light. Like, I think you're right. It's more of a like whispering ideas to her as he was like the slave in Ultra Despair Girls kind of thing. But it's just kind of an interesting moment to just flash through and keep going.
Right.
Oh yeah.
I initially also was like a little taken aback by just like the syntax of the comment for a moment. I was like, wait, hold on a second. But yeah, I definitely don't think it was intended to be interpreted in a way other than like I guess like maybe moral or intellectual way, because I totally agree with what Caroline said. I think Nagito represents the gray area, and that is something that, you know, becoming an adult requires you to understand nuance, like Caroline said. And then Monica, I think, goes on to say something along the lines of like, oh, because of him, like, I started to get bored by the whole like hope versus despair thing, or like whatever. She kind of goes on to say that. So that's how I interpreted it, is that it's just like the complexity that he brought to the situation made her just kind of be like, screw this whole hope despair thing. Like, it's not all it's cracked up to be. And so maybe this is just me, but when Monica just like blasts off into space, at first I was like, is she dead? Like, I'm like, I'm pretty sure she's not, because then I was like sitting there the first time I was watching this show and I was like, is Monica just dead now? But then Toko and Kamaru start talking about like, oh, she'll learn, like she'll get older, she'll understand. And I was like, okay, so I don't think she's dead, but she just like literally blasted herself off into space in the back of a truck. So suspension of disbelief, I suppose.
Right.
I think it kind of lends to a potential future game, honestly, because a really great way to continue a series is to throw one of the main antagonists up into space for an undetermined amount of time, and then just when you're ready, bring her back, you know. And who knows, maybe she does come back in future games.
Whoa, who knows?
Or maybe she comes back in the rest of this show. I honestly don't remember.
I actually have no memory of that. I have no idea. So
talking about her spaceship, there's a box within it labeled Derazon, which has a little smiley under. It's like an Amazon box.
Yeah.
But with DR, so Danganronpa. Yeah.
You know.
And I just wanted to bring up the idea that if Amazon exists in that dimension, then we do too.
Wait a minute.
So all of this is real.
Have you seen that theory? No. There was a video by Hank Green on TikTok, and he was like, someone brought up that in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Ant-Man is reading The Fault in Our Stars, which means that John Green exists in the MCU, which means that Hank Green exists in the MCU. And he was like, which means all of you exist in the MCU. So by that logic,
I really hope we don't, but
ultimate literary girl up there.
I'm there. Me and Toka will have to compete for the title, but how will we? Because we're too passive aggressive and afraid to do so. I have all of my, the rest of my notes are literally just, can you tell I love the characters Toko and Byakuya, because they're all about them, even though they're not featured. Like, Byakuya's in this episode like for two seconds, but I just was so excited that he was even there. I just want to talk about Toko's, I mean, we talked about the 19 children. Toko's fantasy, that was just silly. And I'm really glad in the Ultra Despair Girls episode that they brought that back, because that was such a big thing in the game and I was not expecting it. And when it came up, I was like, oh my God. And it was just so over the top. And Byakuya riding in on that like car, I was just like, wow, excuse me, I need to fan myself for that. And then I also love that after Byakuya like senses that Toko is like fantasizing about him, that just made me laugh. And I'm glad that the show or in the games are like self-aware enough that like that's something that they just threw in there. So, and lastly, they have the video chat with Byakuya, and like Toko is like drooling during it, but she's like relaying the information. She's not like completely incoherent, which I think definitely shows like, you know, some serious like growth within themselves. Also, both of them have grown so much, and you can really see that in this episode, like how much they've changed. Like, yeah, anyway, that, okay. I just love those characters. They're kings.
So one of the last notes I have as well, you know, she jets off into space. Monica's going away. She hits the M off of the building, and what's left is Onaka, which means stomach in Japanese.
Huh.
And I don't know why that's there. I don't know if it's just random. It's like, oh, Monica's name is now off the building. But they showed that. They showed the name on the building like 3 times. From the start to the end, and I was like, stomach. Like, what?
That is so like, you know, the guy with the yarn, like the meme with the yarn, like that is just like, we are that all the time.
100%. Oh, yeah,
it reminds me of like, so there's what is it, where I used to live, there is an Einstein Bros bagels shop like near my house. And this one day, some of the lights went out and it just said Einstein Brogels. And like for the rest of like 3 years, it was like that. And every time I drive by, I'd be like, what does it mean? What does it mean? Einstein Brogel. My last note is just the revelation that we get at the end of this episode that apparently someone that is, you know, Makoto was involved with at the end of the first Killing Game. So one of the 6 survivors supposedly is going to die.
Wow.
And,
wow.
And that, like,
that was
because
bomb.
Of Makoto.
Yeah.
Is like, yeah, the implication. And I don't know if that means that Makoto is going to kill someone, or like if there's just some reason, like something Makoto's involved in is going to get someone killed.
That my last note based off of that is when Monica is like jetting off into space and they're like, you have to tell us who it is, like who's gonna die, and she's like, fine, it's gonna be
yeah, there's a little like fart animation.
That was the funniest thing. Oh my goodness,
that I love that so much. That made me cackle. I forgot about that. Oh my God.
That's too good. Thank you, Monica, for giving us this joy today.
Also, as an audience, how despair inducing is it continuing this show knowing one of the survivors will die, according to Monica? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like, oh man, like we cannot have a moment of peace in this series, let me tell you.
Should Kamaro have shared that with Makoto? Because like Kamaro knows that her brother is how he is, and he's like, everything's my fault, and, you know, I'm a leader.
So, I mean, I will say, like, you know, if we take Oedipus, which I know, like, Oedipus complex is, like, a common word, but the myth itself is about a king who finds a prophecy that one day his son will kill him. That's, like, the prophecy. And so he tries to take every action to, like, prevent that from happening, which in turn makes that event occur. Like, if he had just ignored the prophecy and lived life normal, it probably wouldn't have happened. But because of his own, like, hubris, or I don't know, whatever, I mean, also fear that your son will kill you, you know, valid, I would say, he, like, took action against it, and it and in turn happened. And so I'm almost wondering if Kamaru hadn't shared these details, if it, like, if someone were to die as a result of this, like would it have been prevented with her not having told him? You know, just a thought.
Yeah.
Also, one of the, is it someone in the game? Like, we know it's someone in the killing game, like, because it could also be, like,
it, we don't know, because, like, Hina, I think it's Hina, says something like, oh, well, Byakuya, Toko, and Hiro are probably safe, but, like, we don't know. And so I think that we just don't know.
We gotta think about our boy Hiro out there.
I know. Right, I know. He's gonna get gunned down. Yeah. Poor man.
By Makoto.
I love Hiro. He is a king.
Mm-hmm.
He is.
All right, everybody. We're gonna take a quick break before we go on to the Despair Arc episode. But we want to know all your thoughts about the DR3 anime. Make sure you leave a voicemail at anchor.fm. We love to hear from you. And you can tweet at us or follow us on Instagram. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast pretty much everywhere. And yeah, we will see you after the break. Hello, everybody. Caroline here with a pretty exciting announcement. So I, separate from the other Ultra Hope Girls, am offering some online virtual classes in things such as writing, because, you know, I'm the ultimate literary girl, and performing, and also some clubs and classes virtually via my own school, which I founded, called the Spilling Ink School. You can check that out at thespillinginkschool.com. I'm offering tutoring and college essays. I'm offering, you know, piano classes and all that jazz. So definitely check it out. It's a good time. And I will also be offering some clubs and classes that are Danganronpa related via OutSchool. So I'll keep the links all in the description. They are for people under 18, so ask your parents before checking it out. But yeah, I'm excited to potentially have some listeners in my classes, and I wanted to let you know that that's going on. So thanks so much in advance for checking it out, and I look forward to teaching some of you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the, we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Let's get going. So we learn a lot more about Mitarai in this episode, and I think we get to see more of his talent in this episode come out. Like, really why he has been deemed the ultimate animator. Yeah, like, before this episode, I think he is shown as a very, you know, scared, nervous, lack of sleep kind of energy, you know, but this, we really get to see why. And I think it's really cool, like, when he goes into talking with Junko about, you know, his work and how it works. And yeah, it was just cool to see him in his element.
For sure. I actually had a question for the group on that note. So if Ryota has to use brainwashing techniques to get people to like his anime, does that mean that he's the best animator ever or the worst animator ever?
I think that it makes him the best animator, but one of the worst storytellers.
Hmm.
Because he is using animation to charm everyone who watches his anime. However, he relies on that to make it succeed.
Oh God, that's so real. Because if he didn't use this brain mind manipulation stuff, but he just told a story from the heart, it would probably have the same impact on the people watching. But like, Yeah, that's a great. Oh, great. I couldn't have said it better myself, I would say.
Oh.
I know, I'm the ultimate literary girl, but you said it the best. I'll give it to you, Marin.
We said it the best.
Oh, cute for us.
But yeah, what do you think, Maddie?
I don't know. I think that that's a good way of putting it, but I wasn't sure. That's partly why I wanted to like pose the question to the group, because I was like, oh, he's the best animator. Look at like all these advanced techniques that he's able to use. And then I was like, wait, if he has to brainwash people into liking his anime, wouldn't that mean that he's the worst animator? I don't know. I think, yeah, it depends on how you look at it.
It's interesting when he's explaining how the creators of the in the Danganronpa 3 anime are using the same techniques to us. Mitarai says, I can use visual cues here, and I can use sound and box. I can use sound to increase focus, and box 15 starts playing, which is what we were like shown to focus in the games. Like, it's like, oh, it's just it feels like another one of those things where the creators of Danganronpa are like poking fun at us, like they're like, ha ha ha, we do this too,
right? Yeah. It's very meta.
Does that then pose the question that all storytelling is manipulation in one way or another? I mean, that's a terrible way to look at it, I mean, honestly, but like, and obviously we're not using like crazy technology like a literal, you know, what he is doing, but I mean, like, oftentimes when we see a good like play or a good movie, we think, okay, if it's a comedy, did it make us laugh? Did it make us cry? If it was like my favorite movies are the ones that make me like weep like a baby. But isn't that just like, I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And I think, yes, actually, I think that the point of entertainment is to manipulate us. And I think that that's not necessarily all a bad thing. Like you said, like the most enjoyable shows or movies or whatever sometimes are the ones that, you know, get at your emotions and make you cry or make you laugh or make you feel scared, or like, you know, we want fiction to make us feel things. And, you know, we let ourselves be manipulated by that because we find it meaningful. And yeah, so I think absolutely storytelling is a form of manipulation, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I was gonna disagree until Maddie said the thing about manipulation not having to be bad, because I think it does have a negative connotation. But if you take it for face value, yes, art is created to make the artist or the audience feel something, or both, you know. But yeah, so yeah, I do actually. That's a really interesting. It's like 9:50 a.m.
And we're like is art manipulation?
We're on fire.
That's awesome.
I think that leads really well into that quote from Ryota that Caroline, you briefly hinted at earlier.
Right.
Like, I'll talk about it.
I watched this episode like a month ago because I thought we were doing this episode a month ago, but we didn't do this episode a month ago. And so I just had a note that said firework versus bomb comment. And then I was like, what does that mean, guys? And then they helped me out. So basically, I'm paraphrasing because it's been a minute since I watched the episode, but Ryota says something about like how if you can use gunpowder for a firework or a bomb, but it's how you use the gunpowder that is sort of what matters. I think this is a really true and good point. Like if you look at the most evil of like in our fiction storytelling stories, it's a twisted way of good. Like all evil is born out of good. It's kind of like Inside Out, like joy and also life. Joy can't exist without sadness, you know, and it's like I couldn't agree more with that, honestly. Is what he's doing right? Like if we look at storytelling as being sort of a form of manipulation, like how much worse is what he's doing? Because he's just using it as like a tool to like make the audience feel something. Firework.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he says like, oh, I want to use my anime to like make the world a better place or something.
Right.
Then I think Junko is coming along trying to make him twist that into using it for evil.
She's trying to take the gunpowder and make it into a bomb. And he is trying to take the gunpowder and put it into a firework.
Exactly.
I think there's a really tragic moment after Junko and Mukuro watch the anime that he's created where Junko starts destroying his anime collection.
Yeah. Oh
my
God.
And says, like, yours is so much better. Like, all of these are trash. Like, I'll never watch these again because of how good yours was. And I think it's just kind of like, I don't know. That was one of, actually, I don't want to say that because this episode gets really dark really fast. I was going to say it's one of the saddest moments of the episode, but it is not. But it is like one of the first sad moments of the episode, because it's just, when I look at that scene, I think of all of the creators who spent their time and their life and their like creative energy on those projects. And it's just, it reminds me of when I go and watch a movie and it's, you know, better than a different one I've seen, how much I regard that new movie over the old, and I forget how that older art like used to like affect me. And like, it made me really sad. I was like, oh man, sad. But yeah, that was a hard scene to watch.
I think that also brings up a good point of like, in general, when analyzing art, it's so important to look at it through the lens of the time it was made, and like, you know, for what it was when it was released, and you know, having those conversations of like what it looks like now. Like, we talk about Danganronpa, like, you know, the first game made 10 years ago, and they don't really have any canonically queer people in the thing. And we talk about how, like, you know, maybe the core problem isn't like if we're arguing if certain characters are queer or not, but it's that the game didn't tell us, or the game didn't make it canon. And that's like a product of the time period. But we also love these games, despite that, having those conversations. And so, you know, it is like, I just wanted to like say that, because it, you know, it is sad. I feel that way. Like, my favorite show is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but one, it's not a perfect show. There are problems with it big time, especially as years have passed. And two, I've watched other shows that have had a similar impact on my life as that show had when I first watched it. And so it is kind of sad to like find that, you know, almost replaced in a way, but it doesn't mean it was less important to you when you first watched it. Like, it changed your life when you saw it. So
Chiaki.
Chihiro.
No, Chiaki. Like, I'm just talking about how, like, you know, she's not there anymore, but she still impacted your life, even though you don't really remember her art.
Yeah. Like, it made you who you are, even if you, in 10 years, I forget Buffy ever existed. Like, that made me part of who I am now. So, yeah. I like how my ass said, Chihiro.
Also Chihiro.
Because, like, I thought you were, like, you thought I had said the wrong person for the one comment. No. I thought that was what you were saying.
It was very unclear what I was doing.
It's Chihiro.
Sorry. I have a note also, kind of like in regards to that scene where Junko is destroying the anime, but it's not a deep or thoughtful note at all. It's just I LOL'd when she's doing that and she yells like, we don't need any of this anime anymore, and like gets the bat to go smash it, and the disclaimer text comes across the screen like, this is her personal opinion. I was like, I love
this show. That's so good.
That was funny.
Yeah, I felt like one of the creators was like animating this scene and they were directly talking to me. Like, they were like, we see this, we're not happy with it either.
My next note is just Gundam's grizzly bear appreciation there. Just, you know, a shout out, wanted to give that. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to say, Marin, I can see why you ship the Ultimate Imposter and Mekon. I can see it. I really do too.
I think that's a cute ship.
Isn't it? It just warms my heart, and they're so respectful of each other. Like, it's, oh my goodness. That's one of my OTPs from this game. Like,
that's real, so talk. Good. I it's love so cute. That.
Yeah, he's like, so he's very good to her. Like, mm-hmm. He respects her, and yeah, it's just good.
And I think like he's so intense, like he like pins her against the wall, but I don't think he knows that's really how it looks. Like, he's just like, I'm intense, like, we've got to figure out where Ryota went, and she's like, oh my gosh, like, yes we do. Yeah, oh, it's so good. I love
they're so cute. I know some people ship him and or them, sorry, we don't know the gender, them and Ibuki too, because of, I think in the manga there's like some stuff implying, I'd have to look, but like there's stuff implying that like they could be romantically involved, which I also think is very interesting. And a lot of people ship Mekon and Ibuki, So it's like this triangle of like potential shippage, which I love all of the combos. I'm definitely a multi-shipper, so it's cute.
So my last note before we get into like the biggest, most awful, most tragic event of Hope's Peak high school history, whatever, is when Junko uses her super analysis and like her eyes start rolling around. Like I honestly, I'm sorry, I laughed at that. Like I was like, seriously? Like I had a hard time taking that seriously because I know that like that's supposed to be the twist. Part of like what's the twist on Junko's character is that she comes across as like, ooh, this dumb blonde. Like she's kind of almost that stereotype, but then she's actually a super genius. And so like I appreciate the attempt at that kind of twist on things, but I do start to see in this anime why people don't like her as a villain, to be perfectly honest. I think my opinion of her has changed a little bit. Like I liked her as a villain originally, like after Trigger Happy Havoc, I thought she was like an interesting character, but I'm starting to kind of see why a lot of people are like, not a fan.
I agree. I've never really liked Junko as a villain because I think the real villain are the other students with each other. Who causes all the problems? Like, obviously, Junko sets up the situation, but it's the kids who... Oh, my God.
Are you saying 60-40 on the kids right now? Oh!
Oh, my God!
Oh, my God.
I'm... Okay. Let's say that again, because being antagonistic is different than being the mastermind. So like Junko, I would say, is not a foil for any of the characters. She's not like, you know, in it a lot really. And the antagonistic tension and energy and the discourse between the students that makes it so intense and a zero sum game and all of this stuff is the kids with each other.
So I was thinking between the last time we filmed and today about why I do think Junko is a good villain, and it directly relates to Caroline, what you just said, which is that I think that Junko is the perfect villain for this game because she's just evil and we can get on with that and analyze the evil within the kids. She is the perfect backdrop to be able to forget about the common enemy and just focus on the kids and how they're being affected. Like that she serves to bring about character development.
That is so real.
So what I'm hearing, interestingly enough, is that Junko is not a gray area nuanced character. She's just evil and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Totally. Yeah. And I see that now, I think. And I think that's now why I'm starting to feel like she's a little bit less interesting of a villain. And so, yeah.
Which that actually, I think I would agree with, because I think that that goes along with what I said, is that we're done with her. You know, right. Like she's made her case and you know, so I actually changed my opinion from like the last time we filmed where I was like, no, she's interesting. Do you like my Marin impersonation? But like, but like, I agree. I just think, I don't think she's a bad villain. I think she's an uninteresting one, but it serves to make the game interesting as a whole.
That's true. Ah. That is okay. Couldn't have said it better. Actually, that's really, really true. Yeah. Cause there like the go. Best villains, like Javert in Les Mis is like one of my favorites because it's his humanity that makes him interesting to read and to watch in the musical. And so, you know, read in the book. So just read in the book, watch the musical. Just so that's clear. I don't read musicals, like, but yeah. So, oh, Marin. Wow. You're like really smart. Maybe you should like have a podcast or something where you talk about these things.
Well, I would need like two co-hosts to do that. You know, like maybe someone who's like really smart with books, someone who's like really smart with psychology. I just don't know where I'd find that.
Yeah, I don't know where you
get that. It's like if you were going to meet those kinds of people, it would have been like in middle school or something. So
yeah, like the window has passed.
Womp womp. We're so funny. So talking about the children being evil, I think lends really well into Caroline, your
segue.
Question.
Segue is, so, you know, this biggest, most awful, most tragic event in human history, it kind of goes off without a hitch, honestly. Like, it goes as planned. like the kids murder each other immediately. And it's, isn't this sort of the test for the Killing Game a little bit?
I had a note that it's like, it's like the Killing Game in beta.
Right. It's so true. And then in Trigger Happy Havoc, they don't all immediately slaughter each other. It's like a slower burn, but there are survivors. So why is it that it works? The goal is met in this version of it, but at the end of Trigger Happy Havoc, the goal isn't like met because there are survivors, which could have been, we've talked about this before, that Junko wanted to fail, to feel the despair of failure. So, you know, that's, I guess, one thing you can say, but.
That's a good question, because I honestly, watching this whole scene, I felt like I didn't have enough context or information to adequately suspend my disbelief. At certain points, I was like, really? Like, it's been like 5 minutes and it's already a bloodbath. Like, I was right. A little skeptical of that.
So honestly, I pulled a classic Marin here and I looked at the DVD tapes and I went to Google Translate and tried drawing in the Japanese symbols to see what the videotape said.
God, Marin.
Because that's just what I do. And and I definitely got a lot of them wrong. Because like some of the stuff didn't make any sense at all to me. Like it to listeners, I don't speak Japanese. I cannot write Japanese. And so this could be very incorrect. And I just want to put that out there that I am no expert on the language of Japanese, but I got from one of them city date, like a date, like a date. And then the other one I got was mosquitoes.
Oh my God. I think that was operator error.
I agree. But the city date could be one. I just think the fact that the videos had words that were not just like so-and-so's video, or the fact that I think the videos did not have words that were just so-and-so's video, could be motivation to be like, oh, like that's what my DVD is about. Like, you know, like I don't want that in there. And the only other big thing that I think was a propelling factor was when Mukuro shot the one girl in the classroom.
Yeah.
Because the main student council guy or one of the main student council people was like, you know, like, wait, like we just need to. And then someone's dead. Like, imagine you're in a classroom, three people come in, and within 10 seconds, someone's dead. And there's a bunch of weapons on the floor and something very incriminating in a DVD. Like, you don't have time to react. You don't have time to process, really. And so I'm not saying it's right at all. I'm not saying it's right at all. No. However, this is like pressure cooker times infinity, times a million bajillion. There's no food, no water, no hope, nothing.
But you know what they do have is they have like an escape. They can get out like eventually. Like if they stuck it out and didn't kill each other, they could leave. Well, it's not Mukuro, like they're trapped in a school.
Mukuro says, like, if you guys don't kill each other, I'll kill you.
Yeah, and she kills the one girl. You know?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
like they have a threat from either Mukuro and Izuru, who's blocking the door, or each other. And like, I don't know why they choose each other. Sometimes they don't, though. Like, there's like the two people who are in love who are like, let's make death beautiful. And then like someone comes from behind, you know, and gets one of them. That was very disturbing. This whole episode
was hard to watch.
I almost like, in this series, there have been two moments that I've almost stopped like continuing on, because I'm somebody who's very sensitive with media. One is Ibuki's death in DR2. And the second was this moment. Like, I was watching it and like, I don't know what was going on with my version of this that I watched, but the blood was red in the version I watched, not pink. And it was horrifying to watch because it was red. Like that little difference, like, and then when I rewatched it for this episode that we're filming right now, it was pink, and I was like, wait, I thought it was red. Like, I remember it being red when I watched it and thinking, oh my God, this is so much worse because the blood is red. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, huh. So horrible.
So at the very end of this murder scene, people are killing each other. There's a girl who has a chainsaw, and on the chainsaw is written Jason Freddy, which I believe is a reference to Freddy versus Jason, which is a 2003 American slasher film, which was a crossover between Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, between Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees, I believe is how you pronounce it. And super interesting reference. I think this was included because I think Freddy is supposed to represent Junko in this scenario, because in this movie, Freddy appears to Jason and tries to manipulate him into killing all of the citizens of Springwood to create fear and allow for Freddy to regain strength and regain, like, kind of his appearance and respect, in like the kind of killing communities, right? Which is, I think, what Junko is doing here with Izuru, is saying, hey, get this classroom to attack each other. And she's gaining her, you know, power and her strength. But the chainsaw is not a weapon of choice for Freddy or Jason in their movies. If you think about American slasher films, or just slasher films in general, a chainsaw is really more closely recognized with a person named Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And what's really interesting about Leatherface is that Freddy is a demon that appears in dreams. Jason is pretty much a zombie, but Leatherface is 100% human, which is part of what makes him so terrifying. And so the fact that in this scene with a Freddy Jason reference, she's choosing to use something that's 100% human to cause all of this like bloodshed, I think is a direct reference to kind of what we were talking about with Junko, where it's just the kids, like it's the darkness that like sometimes is there and just being shown so evidently and disturbingly on the screen. I was just kind of, yeah. Also, there might be a movie between Jason, Freddy, and Leatherface coming out soon. Letting you know that I will not watch it because I don't like horror.
But, yeah, no way. That is, yeah. Nope.
I like horror. Yeah. I'll watch it.
I'm glad someone does.
Oh, it's funny though, because like, yeah, I, one of my notes honestly was that this scene in this anime, I found really hard to watch, even though I am someone who watches a lot of horror. And like, I consider myself like pretty, like I have a pretty strong stomach. A lot of it doesn't bother me. Like this was hard to watch even for me.
So you can only imagine what it was like for poor small Caroline.
Oh yeah.
Quivering.
Oh, yeah. And spoiler alert for Freddy versus Jason in case you're watching it, but the end of this scene in Danganronpa 3 with the severed head, that is how that Freddy versus Jason ends, is literally with Jason surfacing from the lake holding Freddy's head. And so like this is a reference to that. I am sure of it. Yeah. But just crazy parallels and just disturbing. I didn't sign up for this.
I know, really. I mean, yeah, it is interesting because like maybe, you know, this beta version was less despair inducing for Junko, which is why she decided to go with like the slower burn version of the killing game. Because I was just thinking like, you know, a parallel to this would be like the second case with the secrets, because everyone sees their own secret. You know, it's kind of like you said, like they saw in the DVD, the words potentially of something implying their fatal blunder or whatever it was. And this is kind of similar. Mosquitoes. That's actually in Chihiro's free time event. There's like a mosquito inside. I forget. Yeah, it was cute.
That mosquito's been making his rounds.
Yeah, her rounds.
Actually, only female mosquitoes bite people.
I didn't know that. Oh my God. Genocide Jack is a mosquito. Human mosquito. That's such an interesting fact, Maddie. Thank you for sharing. Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Do moose eat meat?
No.
Moose eats meat.
But Marin's moose eats meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Female mosquitoes, mosquitoes in general don't like eat blood as like a food source generally.
What?
The female mosquitoes just need blood to be able to incubate their eggs.
I have a note about Izuru Kamakura's theme, which is you remember when Nagito died and there's that like operatic music in the background.
Yeah.
It's the same as Izuru's, like when he walks into the room at the end of everything. And that it's called Izuru Kamakura's theme, which I think is very interesting because it almost implies that Nagito may have known. Does he actually know? He knows that Hajime isn't an ultimate, so maybe he doesn't know, but he subconsciously knows because they're in love.
Yeah. In the second game in Goodbye Despair, isn't that music track called like something like Let Us Sing of a Hollow Victory?
I think, but it's also called Izuru Kamakura's. Yeah,
that's
theme.
So interesting.
Yeah. And I remember seeing that and being like, I can't talk about this.
And that's so interesting though, because Izuru Kamakura is like Hope's Peak's Hollow Victory.
Right. It's like he fulfilled his purpose, but like at what cost?
Yeah.
I think that even like no matter where Nagito is in knowing who Hajime / Izuru is, they're both really the two, like, to bring up what you were talking about earlier, Caroline, they're really the two gray characters in that they are both, like, Izuru is just, I'm bored with everything, I've seen everything, I know all of the world everywhere, yeah. And Nagito doesn't see just black or white, it's always gray. And so it's two very interesting characters who kind of view the world in, like, a similarly different way, question mark. Yeah, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. I think that they both do relate in some ways. We found this classroom in Trigger Happy Havoc with all of the chalk outlines of the bodies, and I remember thinking, like, when I played Trigger Happy Havoc, that I was like, what group did this, like, what organization did this, who's the evil mass murderer, right, who did this? And it's them, it's the bodies themselves, like, it's like, right. Oh, that was just a lot. The next thing I have is that Kisakura promises to protect Kyoko, which is pretty cute. Pretty cute. So we see, I think, why Kisakura has been like kind of like joshing with Kyoko and sticking by her side and being all chokey chokey little buddy. Oh yeah. And then lastly, I had a question. So we see Junko sends out an email, a mass email to everyone about the massacre that just happened. And I wanted to ask, did she ever lie in that video? It was quite clearly propaganda, right? In that it was a very one-sided view of what happened. And I think the only lie that I picked out was that she kind of implied that Izuru was the murderer, the only person responsible for the murders. But other than that, did she lie?
Yeah, wait, I agree with you, Marin, because she said like, oh, Izuru did this. Izuru just stood there.
He killed one of them who was attacking him.
Yeah.
Right, in self-defense, you could say.
But other than that, I think it's really interesting to think about that video and how it doesn't always take a lie to twist the truth.
Right. Oh, Marin! I was literally about to say like the same thing in response to that. Like, because you're right, she didn't lie.
Yeah.
But lying isn't always in such a black and white form. It is gray. God, that's been the theme of this episode, is finding the gray. 50 Shades of Gray. 11037 Shades of Gray. That title for the episode. Yeah. It's funny because, like, I don't have a ton of notes for the despair arc of this episode, just because we were talking about storytelling being a form of manipulation. It was like almost as if I couldn't focus on anything except what was occurring because it was just so horrible and gruesome.
Yeah.
And maybe that's kind of in the creator's own way. This was part of their own manipulation of like the audience viewing this work itself, because it was so horrible to watch.
Yeah. And that also makes me think, like, I had this thought when I was watching kind of towards the end of this episode, is like, after that email goes out from Junko and the masses, you know, come to the gates of the school and they're angry and they're like mobbing and they're like, what is our money going towards? I was like, is that their, like, I that's their primary concern,
right?
It seems like if they received the news of this like massacre, they'd be like a little more freaked like out rather than just like, our money. But like, they didn't see what we saw, you know what I mean? They only heard about it through hearsay, so like, they didn't have the same reaction that we did.
And Hope Speak is trying to cover up the massacre. So I don't know if even the public knows it happened.
Well, I think they do because of the footage that Junko sent out.
Oh, gosh. But, I'm so sorry. It's been so long since I watched
that. No, it's okay. But they, you know, they did not see it in the first-hand perspective like we did. And B, they were led into thinking that it was just like Izuru Kamakura who then went and murdered all of them. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So yeah, at that point. Then.
Rather than them killing each other.
This is what our money's going towards. like, how about students were murdered?
My tax dollar. All right, listeners. So for today's amended Bedwood Behead, we are going to be picking between the three characters, Monica, Nagito, and the entire Hope Speak Student Council. So each of us, yes, that is what we're doing. Each of us has quietly thought of a prompt to give, and we will now share them. So I could go first, I suppose. Mine is that who do you want to binge watch all six of the Sharknado movies with in a row, no breaks? They're about 2 hours each, so it'd be 12 hours long of a movie binge.
Thank you for the time length that was necessary in my decision-making process. Mine is, who would you want to open a coffee shop with? Like, start a small business coffee shop.
Okay. Mine is going to seem simple and be very difficult. Who would you take to therapy?
So,
like, I think they need therapy?
Or, like, is it couples therapy? Or like
you'd be dropping them off at therapy, picking them up, maybe going and grabbing a celebratory snack afterwards.
Well, I think the answer is every single person.
That's why it's hard.
You just drive them in a bus to therapy. It's like, maybe it's group therapy.
Oh,
that would be perfect. Okay, actually, though, I have therapy. My answer. Should I go first?
Sure, Maddie. Maren was laughing at Grerapy.
Grerapy? Yeah. I didn't even hear that. I'm sorry, I did not. So I would take Monica to therapy. I think that I think all of them need it. Let's be real. I was going to say, I think she needs it. Everyone needs it. But I would take Monica to therapy because, you know, she is very young. She's a teenager. And I think she might need someone to talk through things with, you know, and just have some good conversations and have someone there to support her through everything she's going through, because and then I would open a coffee shop with I almost said Nagito, but I was like, no, because of his luck, like, things would go wrong, like, all the time. I don't think I could do that. So I would open a coffee shop with the entire student council of Hope's Peak, because there would be plenty of people like working in this coffee shop so that like people could cover each other's shifts if someone couldn't come in. Like, you wouldn't have to worry about being stressed out and like understaffed. Like, you know, like it would work. It would work out. I would binge watch all of the Sharknado movies with Nagito because I think he would really enjoy them. I enjoy them a lot. They're cinematic masterpieces, I will say. I've only seen the first two or three or four, but I really want to watch all of them. They're so good. Sharknado, just an absolute cinematic masterpiece. And yeah, Nagito and I would have a great time.
Maddie, this is why your sense of humor is Kokichi. Because you subject yourself to four Sharknado movies. And enjoy it. Okay. Just for, so we're clear.
All right. I can
go. You can go.
Therapy can be had no matter where you're at in life. And so I just want to put that out there, that while all these people do need therapy, it's okay to get therapy and get help. And I suggest it if you need it. Yeah.
I think all humans should have therapy. If you're alive on this planet and living this life, therapy's for you.
Yeah.
It's good to talk to someone.
Okay. It is. It's so good.
I have my answers. So I would take Monica to therapy because I think she could really use someone to talk to. I don't think she has any friends really left. I mean, she really alienated her four friends, you know, and all she has is robotic bears, and now she's in space alone. So maybe some Zoom therapy for that girl. I would take the entire student council to go see all six Sharknados with no breaks, because I think you can learn a lot about a person from watching Sharknado with them, you know. Oh, yeah. And we don't know a lot about the student council, so I feel like, you know, me and the entire student council would have a really good time. Yeah. Then I would open a coffee shop with Nagito, because yes, he has a lot of bad luck, but my goodness, does he have a lot of good luck. So it would all even out in the end, and everything would be hunky-dory, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know. So I would take Nagito to therapy, because I really care about Nagito a lot, and I do, he is a little bit of a, he is a wild man. But I just love him, you know, and I want him to have some therapy, because he, you know, he is a little cutie, you know, he just wants, yeah. And so maybe some therapy would help him out. And also he has like this weird luck superpower, you know, so maybe having someone to talk to about that, like, might be beneficial for him. I don't know, just throwing that out there. For opening a coffee shop, I also choose the entirety of the student council, because you would never be short on employees, and that I will say is so beneficial. Though I guess viewing it from a money perspective, if you're paying 16 people to be employed at your coffee shop, that's going to be a little bit of a deficit, but maybe they can alternate months. There we go, alternating months with 8 employees. Genius. And then I would do Sharknado with Monica, because I just think that she would like be crapping on the movies the whole time, as would I. And I need that kind of energy if we're going to be watching bad movies together. Like, I just need someone who's going to be like, wow, this is terrible, and make fun of it the whole time. So that's why I pick Monica.
Maddie, you are clearly not invited to movie night with Monica and Caroline.
Yeah, oh no, I'd be doing the same thing.
They're so horrible to watch that they're good. No one in the creative team of Sharknado went in going, what are we trying to say to the world with this?
when the shark gets picked up by the tornado, that's really a metaphor for all of the negative energy being lifted out of the waters, out of the people on the boat's lives, and just being thrown at them, thrown in their face. Thank you all for tuning in today. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure you check us out on all our social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Amino. We are everywhere, and we would love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from you, leave us a voice message on anchor.fm. We would love to hear your questions and just get to know what you guys want to know more about in the Dong and Rilpa world. Are you interested in more content from the Ultra Hope Girls? Become a patron. The lowest tier is just $2 a month, and you will get access to a bunch of cool new episodes. Or with a little bit more each month, you'll get added to a Discord where you can chat with each of us and meet a community of really cool people who love Danganronpa just like you. And I think that's it. So we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.